We Will Not Be Tamed, a Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation podcast that encourages all Texans to get involved in conserving the wild things and wild places of our state.
I'm Lydia Saldana with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and I'm sitting here with two guests on the back porch of the Visitor Center at Caprock Canyon State Park. Lucky us. I'll let my guests introduce themselves.
My name is Donald Beard. I'm the park superintendent here at Caprock.
I'm Jesse Story. I'm a videographer and one of the ambassadors of the We Will Not Be Tamed campaign.
And today we've had a pretty exciting day. I guess wrangling buffalo, I guess, is a short way to describe that. Donald, why don't you tell us what we've been doing today?
So what we did is we performed our annual working of the Texas State Bison Herd, where we round up all of the bison within the interior of the park, bring them up to our working pens, and we run them all through. We do a health check on all the animals, make sure that they're just okay. We do vaccinations, and all of the cows we check to see if they're pregnant, and then all of our new calves that we had, we work them. We do we pull tail hair so we can do a genetic workup and work all of our genetics for diversity and for parentage.
Jesse, what were you working on today here?
So I was actually filming the workup for a segment for the documentary I'm doing here at Caprock. So it's just capturing the efforts that they take to ensure these bison are safe and healthy.
And you know, I've seen this a couple of times, but I don't think many people can imagine what's involved with this. Can you describe, kind of paint a picture of what went on today?
It's absolutely amazing. We are so fortunate to be a part of it. I feel blessed to be here. But to work with these unique, amazing animals that we have here and to be on the ground with them that close up and to have a part of their well-being and take care of them, where we bring them in, you see them and all of their glory and how they are just majestic and you know, the historic part of it. It is pretty amazing, you know, to see their power and their like I said, their majesty and just all right there. It's very awe-inspiring, without a doubt.
And just the logistics of it, you had, 200 of the animals? And I tell you what, let's back up a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the herd. How many animals? How long have they been there? Just give us a little backstory on that.
Okay. Well, we can go way back to about 1878, and that's when Charles Goodnight and his wife Mary Ann captured a few calves during the height of the bison slaughter and caught them in these canyons right here between here and Palo Duro. This is all part of the J.A. Ranch at one time. And they started a herd, and he always kept Texas animals, never brought any outside influence from anywhere else. So these are true Texas animals, and they are direct descendants of the herd that he started. So they've been in these canyons for eons. They've been here forever, but officially became the Texas State Bison Herd in 1996 when they were captured out of the wild and brought over here to the park. And from that point on, we've been managing them. I think there was about 32 animals at that time, and the herd has grown to right about 200 now. And so we're growing pretty rapidly, and so we're having to watch the genetics and make sure everything's good like that. So
well, and I remember I was at the department at that time, and I remember when all of that happened. And there was some controversy about the department taking it on because it really wasn't understood what it was. And then they did the genetic testing. What they discovered was, I mean, it was a pure genetic line, correct?
What they found out is that these animals were, the genetics in these animals are unique. And they're not found in any other animals that have ever been tested. Can't say that any other animals in the world because they all haven't been tested. But they have not found these genetics anywhere else. And because of the record keeping that Goodnight did and the way it was done where he never had any outside influence from anywhere else, what it suggests is that this is the last true remaining example of the southern herd of bison. So it's the genetics in these animals are pretty much exactly like they were prior to the bottleneck of the slaughter of bison in the 1870s. And really amazing.
And it really demonstrates also Charles Goodnight's, conservation ethic for understanding what needed to be protected.
That's right. He did. He took care of them, very meticulous records, and left a legacy for the state of Texas. It's pretty awesome.
Now, Jesse, I know you spend a lot of time in Caprock Canyon. So did you know about the bison herd before you started visiting here?
I knew we had a bison herd, but I never really connected the two. looking back, I can't really picture my life pre-Caprock, if that makes sense. Because since coming here, I've been here so much and it's so familiar to me. I came here originally for the bats, which they have a colony of Mexican free-tailed bats. And I knew there was bison, but like most people, until you see it, it doesn't hit you. And then once I saw them, I started chasing those, essentially, yeah.
So what are you trying to get across in this documentary? What are you trying to communicate?
So when people hear about their herd, they hear about the past, and they hear up to the point where they've come to the state park, and now they're here, and that's kind of where it leaves off. And what we want to talk about is kind of the future, about the ongoing efforts, because the efforts that are currently happening are simply here to make sure there is a future for these bison. And it is a very intensive, kind of very dynamic process that they're undertaking. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. And another thing is I found that a lot of people don't know there's bison here, and they don't really understand bison in their true essence. And so we're trying to paint that. The land is a heavy character in all of this. This whole documentary is kind of the unspoken narrative throughout it.
Okay. And I know, Donald, we were talking about, you know, because you had several hundred of the bison in the pens waiting to be processed, and what, the bulls are out right now?
Right.
And you told me, well, you may not see them. And we pull up this morning and there they were, right there. I guess, do you get used to that? I mean, seeing that all the time?
You do. It's crazy. I mean, this is, I describe this as Yellowstone in Texas, because this is where you come to see bison in their native environment, you know, in a public setting. And it's the only place in Texas where you can do this. Okay, I mean, they're free ranging in 11,000 acres. They can go right through your campsites. They go down the lake and drink. I mean, it's pretty awe inspiring. And yeah, when you're working, you're going to go check on something on the other side of the park, and you're just going from point A to point B. And all of a sudden you're around the corner and you got to stop because there's 50 bison in the road and you got to wait for them. That's pretty neat. You know, there's not a lot of people that say they can do that on their job on a day-to-day basis.
Now, Jesse, you said you've been coming here for how long?
Oh man, since I was in college. And so probably when I was in my bachelor's, that's a long time.
So you guys connected here?
That's correct.
Yes.
Yep.
And so what did you notice about her?
Jesse likes to get dirty. She likes to get out and get in the field and get down with the animals and really show what it's all about. She's not afraid to you know, go off on a hike and sleep on the ground. And, you know, so she is truly out there doing what she's supposed to do to showcase these animals, whether it be bison, bats, prairie dogs, or whatever else we have in the park. So, and that's pretty neat about her, that she can do that and enjoy it. She loves doing it. So it's pretty fun to watch her.
So we traipsed into a prairie dog town with you earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And you were just talking about what it takes to do what you do. Kind of repeat a little bit about that, about patience, about just some of the things you were telling us.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's like that overly challenging. People can, once you've done it once, you can kind of understand things you need to do it better. But there is something to be said about knowing your wildlife, so that way you know the beat, or you can try to predict the behavior of the animal. And with that said, you can't really do a great job of, like, bison are very unpredictable still. But like with prairie dogs, like other bison, I get up and other wildlife, and you want to be here like we were early this morning, just as dawn's breaking, so you can get that good light. You can do that with prairie dogs. There's no guarantee they're going to be up. Sometimes they don't roll up out of their burrows till 9. You want to scout the area. You want to make sure this is good area. Let them get used to you. There's some corridors here, or some pathways that I call honey spots or hot spots, because I've seen coyotes and bobcats here. And how I found that is because I come often and I survey the area, and you spend time. So when you get to know an area, you kind of know its ins and outs and the general movements of the wildlife. And that really helps you plan what you're going to shoot. But like, no matter with all the planning, you have to be able to just hopefully catch something when it happens, you know, unexpectedly. So there's that as well.
So I guess you've got a whole list of critters that you've shot out here. Can you
yes.
share?
Yes. Bobcats, coyotes. We've gotten some good bobcat stuff out here. You've got everything from invertebrates, from tarantulas to camel spiders, horned lizards. I've gotten a variety of snakes here. Larger mammals are going to be like the bison and some of your other mesocarnivores. the bats are a big thing. So there's a whole slew of animals out here that you can get a hold of and see.
Mm-hmm. I imagine you've had some pretty incredible experiences. Any one moment or one thing that springs to mind?
There is a lot that kind of springs to mind. And it really is more of just a meshing of different kind of experiences. When you see a new mammal or animal you haven't gotten, all the way to some of the experiences, probably for me, is working with the bison or filming them in the spring when they're dropping calves. And we had a wet year and it was really green out here and the herd was kind of thriving and they still had a little bit of fight in them. And I think that was probably the best experience, is getting to interact with them and get out there. I got myself kind of in a pickle where there was a couple of coyotes and I went into the herd and everyone's a little on edge, and some of the bulls, they haven't separated, so they're not as welcoming to you being out there. And you learn certain bison. You learn their attitudes. You learn how they feel about you. You learn how close to stand and how not close to stand. And I got very well acquainted with Bison 89 over the years since I've been here. So probably Bison 89 is probably my fondest memory.
But you're here to tell.
Yes,
you're here to
tell. Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
So I know that you got a wildlife degree, an undergrad. You were telling me an undergrad degree?
Yeah, and then I got my master's in communication. So in college is kind of where I started photographing. Okay.
So obviously you've always had an interest in wildlife.
Yes, ma'am.
But you're in it now. You're in it. And what has that done for your conservation ethic?
Everything. I used to be a completely different person. Completely different person, completely unaware. You think you know, you think you have a sense about being environmental, you know. I get my own straw when I go to Starbucks, you know. No. Being out here and actually understanding the meticulous kind of details that go into it, and the fact that it is something that occurs over a lifetime, a person's lifetime, and then from once you gain that information and then kind of the natural history of the animal, to see implement it and to see where it fails is completely another lesson. So I was a completely different person. I now buy less stuff. I'm less superficial. I'm still a little bit less. I'm a kinder person. I'm more social. I mean, every aspect of your whole life changes when you come into a place and you actually start to go outside. Everything, completely different person. Holy. Yeah, totally.
Okay. So you share your work, and I know we found you on Instagram.
Yes, ma'am.
We found you. We've got a stalker.
No, y'all have
as part
been,
of our
thank
team.
Thank you. TPWD has always been like a really good gusto supporter, and that always made me feel good throughout the year. So thank you. And they still are. Like, I have this because the opportunities I have because of Texas Parks and Wildlife, and I do not forget that. So I don't know why, but thank you guys for always following me and supporting me.
Well, I was going to make the point. Okay, so you're on Instagram. So
yes,
you're
ma'am.
Sharing all of this, these images that you have. You've got a bunch of followers. What are you hoping folks take from what you're doing?
That what I've gotten is people, oh, I didn't know that was there. I'm going to go there. I went there. It's better than anything that you said it was. And we love it. And you see people get more involved, and that's what I want more than anything, especially here, because this is one of the places, if I have a week and I can go anywhere, I'm probably going to come here.
To Keppel.
You know, absolutely, absolutely. And so for me, you've seen people start to become savvy to, oh, okay, this is why you're doing that. Okay, this is why they're doing this, or I didn't know that animal was here, and the benefits. So you change people's perceptions. So I guess that's what I want, is to share and get more people, just a doorway to direct people through, really. Hey, go here, look at this, come over to the kind of more wildlife side of things.
So Donald, so we've been involved with state parks. Well, I have now, through the Parks and Wildlife experience, the foundation experience, and the department, for too many years that I even want to say. But for a long time, we have been talking about the demographics of state park visitors, about the age of state park visitors, about the demographics of state park visitors, and you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
So when you hear someone like this, of Jesse's age, talking about this, tell me.
That's awesome, and you're exactly right. And I am seeing more and more of that, Lydia. I'm seeing more and more of the younger generation, and I say younger because I'm not in that generation anymore, but I see more and more of those people that are starting to come to state parks and enjoy them. it's a difference. I mean, you have your retirees that come and spend the winters and the off season, but now you're starting to see the younger people that are starting to come back and enjoy the parks, and it's amazing. It is just in the last, say, 10 years, it's changed quite a bit, and you're starting to see that generation come, and it's awesome, because that's what we need. That's the future. That's future stewards of state parks. That's future leaders of state parks. Those are the ones that are going to take over when we're no longer around to do it. You know, so we need those people to come, and they're coming. They're coming. Speaking of visitation, just here at Caprock, since we put the bison out in 2011, we had 36,000 visitors. Last year, we were 110,000.
Really?
So our visitation has just gone through the roof. And yeah, a lot of it is because of the bison, without a doubt. But a lot of it is just people are just enjoying state parks more.
Well, and we've been in Turkey. We're staying in Turkey. We were in Kittaquay for lunch today. And the townspeople seems to have totally embraced it.
Right. Yeah, it is a part of the community. And that's one of the things that I really try and focus on is, it's not just about state park. Yeah, that's my job. That's my career. That's what I do. But if I'm not making it as good for our local people as I am for our visitors, then I'm doing something wrong. So we have to be neighbors. We have to be good neighbors, be good people for the community, and make sure that what we do, bringing those 110,000 people, is a good thing, not necessarily a bad thing. So, yeah, it's very important to me that we are good neighbors and we are a part of the community. And I am. I mean, I'm here. This is my home now, without a doubt.
And I know another part of the community is the Friends Group.
Right.
Tell me about that.
We couldn't do half of what we do, especially with the Bison Project, without the help of our nonprofit organization, the Caprock Partners Foundation. They are very supportive in what we're doing. They're funding this documentary. They help us with equipment, with restoration work. They have bought chemicals so we can help, take back some of this ground from the invasive species. They bought lunch today for the bison working, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Well, and that big, huge, I don't know what you call it, contraption that was used today, today was the first time, and wasn't that also?
Well, that actually came from sale of some surplus bison. We were able to work a deal with the person who bought some bison from us, surplus bison. But it's still along the same lines. It's people that have a direct link to state parks and want to help state parks. You know, the lady that bought our surplus bison, the winning bidder, she was gracious enough, instead of just making it easy and writing a check, she went out and got this bison squeeze chute that we needed, this hydraulic squeeze chute from Canada, and had it brought here for us and everything. And so, yeah, she went out of her way. It would have been a whole lot easier for just to write a check, but she did what she needed to do and helped us out.
And how was that piece of machinery different than the way you used to? And how did it affect the operation today?
Oh, it's just amazing. And I still just not... I can't believe how easy it went today with that new squeeze chute. It took me a little while to get used to it, but once I started to get the rhythm and the routine, it really was amazing. So I'm able to control everything about it with four levers, whereas last year it took four guys to do it by hand. So, I mean, just the hydraulic squeeze chute, it's the Cadillac of squeeze chutes. it's high end. And it's going to save not only time and effort, but probably a few fingers down the road too. It's a whole lot safer.
Yeah. So this documentary you're working on, and I know you're still gathering footage, you're still doing interviews, but is there anything that's surprised you so far of what you have found?
So I guess working on the Yellowstone of Texas is what surprised me is I knew there were people who wanted to speak on the issue, but the depth of which they feel connected to this place has really blown me away. And the different kind of narratives of walks of life they come from. We have one lady who is a relative of Quanah Parker, and getting her perspective on that, and kind of from this more more natural, back when her generation was here before Western settlement, and how the bison has become celebrated again, to people like Wyman Meinzer, and a very historical kind of perspective he came from. but it's the heart at which they all have towards this. That's probably what surprised me the most, is how deeply this place has grabbed people and how that comes across.
So you've done other documentaries before. Is this the most ambitious project you've
done? Yes, this is like my major solo project. And so, I feel confident in it. We're finishing interviews this month, and then it's editing, and that's the most tedious process. I almost wish like it would go, I've done it faster or had more time to do it faster. But I am so pleased with the people who have, you know, I've had a photographer come in and do time lapses, and they're stunning. And I'm really pleased to see how this baby is going to look with everything trimmed and polished. So, yes, absolutely.
Where can people see it or view it? Where?
So, we are currently working on the distribution. It's going to be in the Friends Group. I'm doing this for the park. It is going to be something for them and their wishes to do with it what they will. I would like to see it online through social media channels or whatever, where people can pay or just watch it. However, that is something that we're still working on as far as which niche we're going to market it out to.
And there's always the next project. What's on the horizon for you?
I have one on bats that I'm doing. It's done, but like I was telling you earlier today, I want to redo the first introduction part of it. I had one I started before my father got very ill. And it was about the Hurricane Harvey that hit Port A, because my parents used to live down there when we were very small children, and I spent like my summers there, and that needs to be finished. So maybe that, but I would like to do kind of finish the bats and then maybe think about something else more conservation oriented. I've got a few ideas, but nothing I'm really sunk my teeth into yet.
Okay. So I'm sure a lot of people that look at your Instagram feed, they probably think, I want to do that. What advice would you have for folks that want to get out there and either video or photograph wildlife?
You just need to start doing it, and you need to like not worry about, when I started, I was just having fun and it went very successful. And then you start doing it more and you think, oh, I need this, or I don't have the right equipment. Maybe you don't have the right equipment for the shot you want, but you have the right equipment to do it. And so get out there and just start doing it and put product out there and do it as often as you can and turn it out as much as you can and just improve. And don't really care about like, oh, you know, I really need that big, you know, that lens. Like, I'm not kidding. You do need certain things. Make no mistake. But a lot of times if you already have the basic kind of camera, like a Canon Rebel or something, you can do it. And you can figure out a way to make it not just an enjoyable, but something where you build a fan base. You can get support through that to continue to do it. Yeah. So the main thing is get out there and do it, and do it as often as you can.
Now, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Facebook, which is just my name, Jesse Story, or you can find me on Instagram at texas.wild. And so that's my handle on that. And you can check me out there.
Okay. And I can't let this podcast end without a plug for Bison Fest, Donald. So tell us about what's coming up in September.
So we have an annual festival here in town. It's not here at the park. It's a street dance. We shut down part of the town. And it's the Texas State Bison Music Festival, which is a long name, but we've all just shortened it and affectionately call it Bison Fest. This is the ninth year, I believe, that we're going to be having it. And every year it just gets better and better. We've had bands like Asleep at the Wheel. We've had Gary P. Nunn. We've had Robert Earl Keen, Wade Bowen, Mark Chestnut, Tracy Byrd. You know, Leroy Parnell. We've had some great names. It will be an awesome time. It will be our best one yet. We're going to have a blast. And it's September 28th, and it's an all-day music festival. We'll have probably five or six different acts playing, and it starts in the morning with an arts and crafts show. We have other things like a car show and a tractor show and some other things that we're working on this year. But it's a lot of fun, a lot of good food, a lot of great music, Texas music. So come on out and enjoy it for sure.
Yeah, and any time's a good time to come visit Caprock Canyon for sure.
You bet.
Well, thank you both for being with us and taking time with us.
Well, thanks for coming out and helping showcase our park and Jesse as well.
Thank you, guys.
Brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, We Will Not Be Tamed calls us all to appreciate the wildness of Texas, the vastness of our Texas spirit, and why we should be inspired to conserve it. Find out more at wewillnotbetamed.org.